Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father. And with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
Remember that time slurs over everything. Let all deeds fade, blurs all writings, and kills all memories. Except are only those which dig into the hearts of men by love. Aristotle. Welcome to this week's episode of Warfare, Advancement, and Revisionism. My name is Preston Floyd, and as always, I'm your host. I'd like to thank you all for joining me this week. I appreciate it. And if you are a newcomer, welcome in. And a returning listener, thank you guys as always. Your support means a lot. I hope everyone has had a good holidays, Christmas for those that celebrate, and New Year's as well. I hope everyone has, again, had a nice and restful holiday. I certainly did for the most part. A lot of people were sick this year, at least in my neck of the woods, and that did cause some disruption to some holiday plans, but, still got to hang out with family and all that kind of good stuff, so I am lucky in that regard. I'm kind of out of it, like in terms of podcasting stuff. I did do research and work and all that stuff while I was at home during the day, but I haven't really sat down and organized. So we will be going over, successor cultures from some of the ones that we talked about the last couple of weeks. And basically, we're going to get through as many of those as I can. And then we'll, of course, be moving to other parts of Europe after that. So bear with me while I get my bearings. My mental acuity is not what it could be, because again, I haven't been really focusing on work or anything. It's kind of killed my productivity for the podcast, and also has killed my brain cells and other factors. I've been getting my butt whipped in chess. In fact, I lost to a listener, Mellow Ken, over on chess.com. He conquered me quite easily, as a matter of fact. So if you too want the opportunity to beat me in chess, feel free. It's warpod on chess.com. And Mello, I appreciate you reaching out and being a good sport about it. But I'm was hovering around 1,000, a little over 1,000, when the holidays started. Now I'm kind of in the mid to quarter 900. So, my mind's a little bit of mush right now, so I gotta work back up to it. And we're gonna start that process right now by diving into some more Neolithic cultures and sites in Central and Western Europe between 6 and 4,000 BC, BCE, whichever of those you prefer. Of course, as soon as I say that, I look at my notes and see that there is one, I guess, it's not really a Neolithic culture. It's not even really a culture per se, at least the same way we've been describing these other material cultures. But it is an important bridge to some areas that we will be covering over this and the next couple of episodes. And that is the Rocamadour culture. And this is a Mesolithic kind of continuum of hunter-gatherers, and it occupied southern France, also kind of the coast of what is now known as the Brittany Peninsula. They also have found some of their artifacts and art kind of on the middle of the Seine River, actually kind of covering where modern-day Paris is, as well as a couple of places in what are now, I believe, Belgium, Netherlands, so the Low Countries, essentially. So The name comes from the Rocamadour Cave, which is in, I believe it's Quercy in France. And this site has a lot of very old Neolithic art. It goes back to the Gravettian period, which we've talked about quite a while ago. And for this week's episode, I'll put some of the cave art in the YouTube episode if you're watching there. But it's kind of it's during this period that, you know, former Rocadurian sites begin to show more signs of Neolithicization. Now, there's always a debate about, you know, is this kind of them copying their neighbors? Is this them, you know, developing some of this on their own and then, you know, learning more advanced techniques from the neighbors, either of the Cardium ware and its successors or the linear pottery culture and its successors? But again, that's all debated. Generally, I think right now it is seen as kind of a bit of diffusion as being the more, I guess, the more backed theory. But there is some evidence, you know, that they were beginning to kind of work this out, some of this out on their own, maybe from some local plants and things like that. But that's neither here nor there. If you want a really in-depth look at it, there was a... it's the Quaternary International. It's volume 472, part B, from April 10th of 2018. It's called Mesolithic and Neolithic Material Productions in Avignon, France, during the 6th millennium BC, Originality or Adaptability. You can read something really in-depth there, and I'll try to remember to include a link to that article in the episode description, but it's by Elsa de Franord et al. But the reason I'm bringing them up is because, again, this is kind of a product of Neolithicization. You can see, because they're occupying some of these same spots, you can see the slow, or not so slow, in the grand scheme of things, transition between kind of this Mesolithic hunter-gatherer to these peoples living along the Rocadurian sites, slowly adopting this Neolithicization, you know, plant, domesticated animals and plants. And remember, we talked about this with the end of the LBK, that they, the at least the patrilineal people who are descendants of Mesolithic hunter-gatherers and women from the LBK cultures, they're the ones that are going to be occupying a lot of Western European coast, Brittany, kind of central France, and they're the ones that are going to be spreading the kind of the Neolithic lifestyle to places in what is now England and Ireland. But we'll talk more about that later, but I just wanted to say that, you know, that this is one of those areas where you do see Mesolithic groups kind of adopting or developing parts of the Neolithic lifestyle on their own, and then they're going to kind of continue the expansion. And it kind of cuts off the LBK and the Cardium from expanding any further, at least at this time. Of course, later, other stuff happens that we'll get into, and it's going to kind of connect more of Europe together in different ways. Now, the first true Neolithic culture we're going to be discussing is a culture that probably has descendants from the Rocadurian and the LBK. And this culture is known as the Cernay culture. And that's the, I believe that's the French pronunciation. You do see some Czech or Slavic names, and those are pronounced, I think, like Cernay, but I believe the French pronunciation is Cernay. This is mostly located around the Seine River basin, and this culture emerges sometime around 4,800, 4,700 BC, give or take. It is right in that area where you do have a little overlap between LBK groups and the Mesolithic hunter-gatherers. Now, try as I might, I could not find much on their pottery. And from reading about, or at least reading what I could find about them, it doesn't seem like pottery was that important to them. They did have some, but it seems very utilitarian. And it, you know, very little designs, and they're all kind of aping the old LBK linear pottery styles. However, they do have a very impressive stone tool industry. They are very good at working and shaping stone and polishing it. There's a pictures of a couple of different stone pieces of, I guess you would call it jewelry, though it's obviously not jewelry, it's just stone. But they have a they had a picture of a bracelet made entirely of schist, which is like a kind of a metamorphic rock, which is, I think, normally gray, but they've kind of polished it kind of this dark, almost black, shade. Now, one thing that definitely stands out about the Cerné culture is their burial mounds. They also kind of have the dolmen, the early dolmen kind of coverings for their burial tombs. But these are essentially, the chambers are very long. They're called long barrows, and they're kind of covered at the front, typically with some type of marker. This is something that you'll see in a lot of different places in Europe in the coming few episodes and into next season. But there are different types, and there are small regional differences between all of them. But the ones in France are referred to as passé types. And, of course, as time goes on, these become more elaborate, and you know, they evolve in how they're constructed. But at least the earlier ones, they may have a stone kind of a stone roofing around the entrance, but on the interior, there's no stone enclosures. They usually used wood, planks, or posts to kind of, I guess, block it off from entry, you know, or at least to keep animals out, probably not human entry. They could obviously move those if they needed to. And there is evidence, of course, that they do bury people at different periods. So this is kind of a communal, or at least maybe certain families use them. Now, they do, again, get larger as time goes on. But the earlier ones are very—they're very low. So you probably have to crawl or at least kind of crouch to get into them. And they're about—they varied in length and width. They could be anywhere between 15 to 35 meters wide and 40 to 100 meters long. Now, of course, as you go deeper into them, they narrow. They're wide to get into. But as you go further back, they kind of narrow out to kind of like a point or like an oval almost at the front. Now, a lot of these tombs over time have kind of disappeared from view because they've been, you know, the ground around them has been plowed or, you know, paved over or what have you. But there are still ways you can kind of tell, at least if you're an archaeologist, of where they might be located. And they do kind of poke around at some of these at various different parts to kind of see what they can find out. Now, they have, of course, found dead in these tombs. And again, some of these are communal. But they would also place the remains of sheep and goats along with the humans, so perhaps some type of sacrificial offering. There are individuals found with arrowheads embedded in their skull. So, you know, that does show that there is violence in the area being practiced, you know, against these people, and they were probably practicing against their neighbors as well. And some of these tombs are used for a very long period of time. There are some, you know, that they had been found going back probably as late as 4,800, and it would be in use for, in some cases, a couple of millennia. I think one, they think it started around 4,800 when it was first kind of excavated, and it was in use for about 3,000 years. And that's with quite a lot of change, you know, over time. But we'll dive more into that here shortly. In addition to these tombs, their economy is also a little bit more different than some of the other Neolithic peoples. They definitely show a lot more propensity to hunting, at least with some of their artifacts tend to show that. They, of course, have, I mentioned the stone jewelry, but they also have a lot of different decorations created from animal bones, teeth, things like that. They found one, and it appears to be like a necklace made from deer teeth, and kind of at the center of it would probably have been what they think is a wolf vertebrae. And I'll try to get that picture placed you know, on the YouTube episode, but the wolf vertebrae, or again, they think it's a wolf vertebrae, but it's been carved to kind of look like a bird's head. At least that's the interpretation that, you know, that the archaeologists.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
I'll just gave. So that is something that, you know, hunting is probably like a still a very big part of their economy, despite the fact that they have shifted primarily more to agriculture and domestication. So perhaps hunting was seen as some type of prestige, kind of prestige pursuit or something they did, you know, when maybe the environment was not suitable for planting large-scale crops. Another hint that they may have been avid hunters is that a lot of the men have been found buried with arrowheads. And these are your traditional kind of flint triangular arrowheads. I'll include pictures of those as well. And it's, you know, it's heavily suspected that their bows and arrows that these would have been on have decayed over time. Also, another piece of technology that they have, and these are called Eiffel Towers, because they kind of do look like Eiffel Towers, but they're very unique spear points. I haven't seen many that look like this anywhere else, at least for this time period. So it's kind of ironic, of course, that they do, that most of these are concentrated around kind of the Paris and the Seine, the Middle Seine Basin. Now, the Cernay, they have a good run. Again, they start around 4,800, 4,700, somewhere in that time frame, and they last to about 4,000 BC. So they end right at the end of the season. So they tie up pretty nicely. What their kind of successor cultures are, a little bit harder to nail down. And it's a question of, you know, how closely related are they to the Cernay? What happened to the Cernay specifically? Kind of hard to get the detail because some Cernay sites are abandoned, but others are not, and there's a question of why that is. Also, one of their kind of contemporary cultures, I guess you call it, to their west, at least at the start and kind of towards the end of the Cernay, they appear to still be hanging out as hunter-gatherers. And they don't really have a term. They're related to, probably, again, the Cernay people, as well as peoples to the south that we'll get to in just a moment. But they are beginning to kind of practice, or not practice, but they're beginning to build their own kind of monumental tombs and things like that. Some of these are known as Karnak stones, and these are kind of on the coast of Brittany. They're a UNESCO site, and there's a lot of them. Most are not kind of built until kind of around 3,500, 3,000 BC. But there are, again, some as early as 4,500. So these people could have been related to the Cernay, or, you know, and just they preferred hunting and gathering as opposed to being, agriculturalist. And some of these stones are quite large. They're nothing quite like Stonehenge, at least in terms of, you know, stacking stones on top of each other, at least not at the earliest date. But they would kind of erect one large massive stone. They would dig into the earth, create their own tumulus mounds, dolmens. There's one specifically, it's the Dolmen of Kerkato. It was thought to be built right around 4,800 BC. And interestingly enough, this still has its original stone, like its original cairn around it. The buildup of stones, they thought to all be original. Now, it did have some menhirs, which are single standing stones, like large ones. That's an archaeological term, menhir, M-E-N-H-I-R, where they were kind of, they were a circle around the dolmen. I think 4 or 5 meters, which is like 13 feet, kind of in a circle around it. And the passage is about 21 feet long, which is like 7 meters. Kind of had a roof around. It was dug low, so it had a kind of a 16 feet height, I guess, from top to bottom. So it's a little bit different from what you would see kind of at some of the Cernay, the Cernay passage tombs. And then it was around 25 meters at its narrowest, going to about 30 meters at its widest, which is like 80 to like 99 feet, something like that. And they found a lot of beads. And there were some blue beads there, like I think it's nephrite. They had pearls, pottery sherds. They found axes, polished axes, arrowheads, things like that. And this entire area where you find all these tombs, they have just found a ton of different jewelry, decoration, axes of different types, all these kind of things, just kind of spread across all these tombs. There are some great necklaces. They have polished jade, axe heads, other types of stone, all worked in, you know, a lot of different ways and shapes and things like that, or at least sizes. Shape, it's generally all the same. Axes are pretty basic at this period. Just one pointy end, one kind of curved end, and, you know, that's kind of it. They also, of course, have stone rings, also things like nephrite and things like that. Apologies for the abrupt cut there. My phone went off, and I I got most of it, but some of it's still left. I couldn't get it out. So apologies for that. I thought I had muted it, but I did not. So, that kind of sums up the Cernay culture. Now, there is another French culture we're going to go over in the south of France this time, a little bit further south, at least initially. And this is the Chassin culture. And this is comes from the name of the type site, which is Chaussechon. And I'm sorry I'm butchering your beautiful language, French people. Any French listeners, apologies. I'm trying my best here. Now, this initially, at least, occupied the current French regions of Occitan and Provence. But eventually they will begin to spread to the north. They do get up into the Seine Basin, as well as the Loire River, as well as parts of the Pas-de-Calais and, you know, some other kind of coastal areas, though they are not the only ones. We have found, wood canoes, potteries, bows, arrows, stone, and wood tools that, you know, do correspond with the Shaolin culture that far north. But again, most of their sites are kind of in the south. They begin to expand that way, oddly enough, right, when the Cernay culture begins to disappear. And the Shaolin culture, they last from about 4,500 to about 3,500. Now, due to their location in southern France, it's thought that they are kind of one of the, I guess, the successor cultures to the Cardiumware culture. Though there is no doubt they had influences from the Cernay and the LBK, as well as groups in Iberia as well. They were completely sedentary farm. Well, I don't say completely. They were mostly sedentary farmers. They had rye, millet. They also had access to local fruits, apples, pears, prunes. And of course, they had herds. And they did hunt some as well. But it doesn't seem to have been quite as prolific a pastime for them as it did the Cernay. They did have access to a lot of really good stone. Being in the south of France, there's a lot of really good mountains nearby. The Alps, of course. There's mountains in the Occitan as well as the Pyrenees. And I can't remember the French mountain range right now. My mind is blank. I apologize. I'll look it up and try to remember to add it. They also, they had pottery. It's very plain. It's mostly all brown. They did have some designs. Typically, they were kind of placing kind of indentations or dots in the pottery, and they would have some lines in there as well. But they're polishing their axes. They have some really beautiful polished stone axes. They have some that are kind of like a light green, a dark black, kind of a glowing, almost brown. But they also create stone faces. They're referred to as stone stelae in a lot of literature about them. But essentially, they're humans kind of wearing these weird headdresses, or at least they have these designs kind of covering their faces. They almost look like medieval helmets and like how they would cover a face, but like the ones with the really thick nose guards. Obviously, that's not what they are, but that's kind of what they look like. And again, they emerge about 4,500, and they'll last till about 3,500. So they last a little bit longer than the Cernay. I'll go ahead and cover them all now, and I'll cover their successor culture next season. But they lived in fairly small villages, anywhere between 100 to 400 people to a village. None was especially massive. There's none, at least that they found so far. They all kind of appear to, you know, once they reach a certain number of people, they kind of expand and, you know, found new villages and things like that. We'll talk about their successors next season. But they have found, I think some are some of their sites have been found at the village of Bercy, which is near Paris. They've found one near Toulouse. They're very widespread over what is now modern-day France. Now, we're a little short of 30 minutes, so I'll go ahead and call the episode here. That kind of covers all the French cultures, at least the ones centered primarily in France. There are a couple of others that do show up in France during this season. However, they're coming in from successors to the LBK, and we'll talk about those next week, at least some of those. There's a lot of successors to the LBK, but we'll get into that next week. The first one we'll talk about is the Mikkelsberg culture. And they're one of the ones that gets into into France as well. But I do want to thank you all again for joining me. If you would be so kind as to rate, download, 5 stars, all that kind of good stuff, I'd really appreciate it. Subscribe, all that jazz. But again, thank you all for joining me. I hope you, again, had a good New Year's, Christmas, all that kind of great stuff. And again, thank you, Melican, for beating me so badly at chess. I appreciate it. Also, you will see me, if you follow me on YouTube or subscribe on YouTube, you will see me streaming there during the week. I play history, strategy, war games, that kind of stuff. I plan on streaming a lot this week since I've been out of town. I only streamed once while I was home. But I am looking forward to getting back into that and working on the podcast a lot more. As well as, I guess, I'm looking forward to getting back to work. not that I dislike my job. I actually love my job. But it's hard taking that extended break from the university system. You know, the universities in the U.S., they have a very long break between the first semester and the second semester. And that's wonderful. I love that I get that. But it's always hard to get back into things. So, but I'm gonna get into it. We're going to work through my brain fuzz here and get back into the full swing of things. But I hope you all have a good rest of your day and week from whenever you're listening to this, and I will see you all next time. Peace. Oh, wait. No, wait. Sorry. Forgot. Completely forgot. Again, haven't done this in a week and a half. Please, if you have any questions, constructive criticism, please feel free to reach out to me at waradredpod@gmail.com. You can comment on any of the YouTube videos, or you can send me a direct message on X/Twitter, and we will see you all next time. Peace. For real this time.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.